Good morning, everybody. I'm very impressed that you all made it here on time for an 8 o'clock session. But we're glad to have you. This is the Competition, Consumer Choice, and Consumer Trust Survey and Data Workshop. So this gives us an opportunity to look at some of the studies and analysis that have been done, really intending to be part of the consideration of the review team that will look at the areas of competition, choice, and trust. Also, I think of interest to a number of stakeholders and initiatives going on within ICANN. So we have with us, at the end, or second from the end, Greg Rafert from Analysis Group, who conducted the Phase 1 economic study. Next to him is Dave Dickinson from Nielsen, who will talk about the Global Registrant Survey that was published recently. Brian Aitchison, next to me here, will talk about some of the internal metrics that we've collected in recommendation from the community, actually from a group that was led by Jonathan Zuck over here. And Margie Milam, to my right, will talk about the CCT review itself and how the plans for that are gearing up. So we'll wait just a minute. Just in terms of the agenda and how we'll go about it, as I said, Margie will kick it off by talking about the context of the CCT review. We have it kind of broken up into three sections where Brian will discuss metrics and we'll have about 10 minutes of comments and discussion on that. And then for each of the survey and study, we'll sort of go through the presentation on that and then have a chunk of time after that for questions and comments. Are we ready? Okay, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'll be talking to you about how we're going to kick off the review team starting actually in January. This is the review of the new GTLD program, just to give you guys background, who, for those of you who may not be aware of what's going on. Next slide, please. Next. There we go. Essentially, one of the important mechanisms we have to take a look at the ICANN programs and really examine how we're doing is under the affirmation of commitments, where there's a commitment that ICANN made to examine the extent to which the new GTLD program promoted competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. This review team will also look at the effectiveness of the application and evaluation process and then the safeguards to mitigate issues that were involved in that expansion. So as we knew, this was going to be kicked off about 2 years. It's been about 2 years since we've actually started some of the work preparation for this, realizing that doing this examination would mean that the review team would want to have access to specific metrics and data to help support how the program has expanded in those areas. And as Karen mentioned, there was community work that was done, and Jonathan Zuck was head of that group, where there were 66 metrics that were recommended as part of that work. And as soon as those metrics were identified and agreed upon, ICANN staff had been developing the data and collecting it both from external sources and internal sources. And then right away we realized that there were probably some big amounts of work that needed to look at the consumer aspects and the competition and economic aspects. And on the slide you see the links to the reports, and you'll actually hear from Dave and from Greg about the outcomes from those surveys. Those surveys really were intended to set a benchmark so that we could see how the program affected competition immediately, but really we were interested more in what's going to happen in about a year from now. So both of those surveys will be followed up in about a year to see how things have changed. And so the purpose of publishing those surveys now were to essentially establish a benchmark so that people could be aware of what it was like right at the onset of the program. And then we'll have a lot of data in about a year to examine to see what changes have been, have happened. Now, in terms of the timing, we have a call for volunteers for this review team. It's open through October. That means that essentially that the group is going to probably get kicked off in January of next year, and we're anticipating about a year's worth of work, but really that's not a fixed date. It could take longer. You know, these are complex issues, but we're hoping that the group can be can develop a work plan that will enable them to get their work done in a year, which would put the report at December of 2016. And then typically what happens when these review teams is that the report goes to the board of directors, and the board of directors decides whether they want to accept the recommendations. And that, and in turn, kicks off either an implementation process, or it could even kick off another policy development process if the review team makes recommendations about things in policy that should be changed. So just so you can understand what can happen from a review team, that certainly happened in the past when we had, for example, the Who Is review team. There were policy development initiatives that were kicked off as a result of those recommendations, such as the privacy proxy work that some of you have been involved with. That happened to get kicked off because of the Who Is review team recommendations. So just so you understand that the timeline is fairly long, in the sense that even if the work gets done in December of 2016, there may be additional work, you know, related to the implementation or the policy development work that may follow. Slide, please. So as I mentioned, this is the timeline. We have currently the call for volunteers open. It'll close on October 30th. We are looking for both volunteers that would serve as representatives of SOs and ACs, the supporting organizations and advisory committees. And we're also looking for independent experts that don't necessarily have to be representatives of those groups. In order to determine who might be a representative of an SO or AC, we will be publishing the list of applicants on November 2nd. And that will give the organizations time to develop endorsements. So if, for example, you want to represent the GAC, your name will appear and it'll say which group you want to be affiliated with. And then the GAC has the opportunity to endorse you, and or GNSO or the CCNSO. I mean, there's certainly the ability to get endorsements from these SOs and ACs. The Affirmation of Commitments specifies that the ICANN CEO and the GAC chair determine the who will be members of the review team. And so Fadi and Thomas will take those recommendations and consider them. And we expect that the review team will be announced in December, because it'll give about a month to get the endorsements, and then in December that group will be announced, which means effectively that the group will probably start their work in January. And as I mentioned, you know, it could be about a year's worth of work, so this is really a rough estimate that the group would be finished at the end of the year in 2016. Next slide, please. So I'm not going to read these criteria, but I think if you're considering applying for the group, and one of the things that, you know, Fadi and Thomas will have to consider is that the review team is a fixed group. It's not an open group. And so they want to make sure that the members can collectively address all of the issues that may arise in this review team. So you're looking at people that have familiarity with the new GTLD program. We want some expertise with consumer protection. We also, because rights protection mechanisms were very important in the new GTLD program, we want at least some members with expertise in intellectual property matters, as well as mitigation of DNS and security threats. And because it is looking at competition, if we can get individuals with experience with competition law or antitrust, that would be useful, as well as really having an expertise with qualitative analysis and information systems, since we're going to have a lot of data to work with in order to determine how there's been an impact on how the new TLD program has impacted competition and trust and those sorts of things. And really what we're hoping that for is at the end of this process that we'll really have recommendations that are fact-based and also implementable and feasible, because I think that's really important, that once the group finishes its work, that it's something that the staff can quickly take under consideration and adapt the program accordingly. Next slide, please. And with that, I'll pause. Should we do questions now on this or wait till Brian is done? Anyone have any questions about the selection process or the review team itself? Oh, Jonathan?
I'll just make a quick comment. This is a little bit tied up in the CCWG accountability because there was initially a recommendation that a new round should wait until the implementation of the recommendations of the CCT review team, and there was pushback on that. And so the compromise position that was found is that the review team is probably going to come up with curated recommendations, those that need to be implemented prior to a new round, those that can be implemented during or after the start of a new round. So that's just one thing that will affect the timeline of other things to some extent.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yes, Sébastien Bachelet from At Large. Yeah, my question is how we will publicize more than this review team, because it's not a working group. It's really one of the review team from the affirmation of commitment, and I don't think that ICANN is doing enough about publicizing that largely. And I don't want to end up like for the result of the GTLD program with no one from some regions that they are not well deserved today. And it's very important that I can take time to and when I say ICANN, of course, staff need to do, but the other group within ICANN need to do also. But it's very important that we publicize that very largely. And I hope that even if you are asking for some knowledge, that it will not be the same shooting once again from one working room to another, to another, to another, because we need also fresh view on this issue. It's not just people who have the best knowledge of how the program was built, but also how we will act in the future. Thank you.
And if I can respond to that, yeah, we have the same concerns as well, because I've done some analysis, and I have this information in our session later today that we're having on the affirmation review commitments, the past ones, that the statistics are we haven't had very good representation across the globe and in past review teams. And so what we've done is we've worked with our global engagement team, and they've been pushing out the information through their newsletters, and our the vice presidents of the various regions are aware of this program and trying to get the word out through their communities to try to solicit more, you know, volunteers from the various regions. We also made a pitch to the India stakeholder group that had a meeting earlier in the week about trying to get people with this sort of expertise from India to see if anyone would have interest as well. So we're definitely aware, Sébastien, of that, but we'll take it back to our comm team to make sure we you know, continue the effort to get the word out.
Another point, it's some of you will see that I am recoming with the same thing, but do you somewhere taking into account what's happened in the first run of new GTLDs, 2000, 2004?
That's information that can be shared with the review team, but I don't know if we have any specific statistics about the past review team, the past rounds. I don't think we've done anything on that.
Well, there were some evaluation exercises done previously, and that's certainly information that could be, you know, that would be important for the review team to have access to, obviously. And one of the, I think it was in the economic study terms of reference too, in the discussions with the group, they were, you know, interested in having, you know, not just looking at the you know, present state, but looking at what had been, you know, work that had been done in that area previously. So that's something that is good to keep in mind. Go to Brian to go into some metrics.
Yeah, thanks, Karen, and thanks, Margie. I'm just going to talk to you a bit more in depth about the CCT metrics and the CCT metrics page and show you a sampling of what's available on that page. I think Margie covered this history pretty well, but you can see that this whole process really got its start back in December 2010, and I won't recover what Margie already talked about, but just sort of say, if you've ever been involved in any kind of quantitative data gathering or studies, you know that numbers are often messy and difficult to find. So it can be quite a long process to get all this done. And while I have the time, I just wanted to send a shout out to Anna Loop, who's one of our hardworking interns who's listening right now, and she's been working very hard at cleaning up all the metrics and making it sort of presentable for this page. So next slide, please. So the metrics are gathered from a number of sources. Most of them are publicly available. You can see our GTLD application page, arbitration provider databases for rights protection metrics, the Trademark Clearinghouse databases, and ICANN and IANA databases, which many of are internal. A lot of the metrics are incorporated from the efforts of Nielsen and Analysis Group, and Dave and Greg will talk to you about that. But the ultimate goal is to build a data set to inform the work of the CCT review team. Next slide, please. It's broken down by category. The metrics are compliance, registries, registrars, domain name registrations, domain name navigation, and rights protection mechanisms. And the page is now available. Just a caveat that we do update the page with the latest data, but sometimes the data can be a couple months old, as certain sources that we take the data from don't update as often. So next slide, please. So, yeah, we'll move just into a few examples of the kind of information you can find. This particular metric is from our compliance category, and it serves as one of our proxies for consumer trust. Compliance has a complaint ticketing system that tracks complaints by category, but this shows the amount of overall complaints that have been submitted to ICANN. It takes into account everything from who is information, IP address issues, spam, viruses, and website content. We have other metrics that track more specific compliance complaints, for example, on who is, and that's one of the metrics that's actually just been updated. And I should note now that was this morning / last night that the metrics page was significantly updated, and I just saw it as I was coming virtually into this presentation. So have a look at it if you're interested. There's a lot of new stuff up. Next slide, please. So this one's quite straightforward. It's in our registry category, and it serves as a proxy for competition, and it shows the total number of GTLDs before and after expansion of the DNS as a result of the new GTLD program. So you see it's quite a jump from 16 to 738. Next slide, please. So this shows the number of new entrants that have entered the marketplace to run a new GTLD, and this serves as a proxy for competition as well. These are companies that didn't operate a GTLD prior to expansion, but you can see there's also quite a jump there. And also, just to be clear, we're talking about specifically about registry operators. Those who've signed an agreement with ICANN, we're not talking about registry service providers. There is a separate metric for that on the page. Next slide, please. Okay, and so here we have a metric that's one of our proxies for consumer choice, and it shows how many IDN TLDs are out there. As many of you may know, in the applications, registries had to indicate both language and script type, so there's obviously a strong correlation between the two charts. Also note that Latin script has 677, and I didn't include that in the chart as it would make everything else look really small. So, but it can give you an idea of what's happening. You can see that most new IDN TLDs are in the Chinese language and Han script at 38. And next slide, please. Now, this metric shows the number of registrations in IDN TLDs as compared to the total number in new GTLDs, and it's a measure of consumer choice as well. And note also that these are cumulative numbers. And I realized as I was reviewing this morning that the charts may be a bit confusing in terms of scale. The left chart shows the total number of new GTLD registrations, and it's in millions. As you can see, so that's good. But on the right, you have total registrations and IDN TLDs, and it's in the hundreds of thousands. But you can say that over the past, well, 6 months, or the first 6 months of June of 2015, roughly 10% of the registrations have been in ID and TLDs, more or less.
Thanks. Jeff Newman. The IDN TLDs, that excludes also the IDN CCLDs as well?
Is that, I believe so, yes.
Okay.
And actually, that's a good segue into questions, Jeff. That's all I have for my portion of the presentation, so open it up.
I asked if it excluded, and they said, yes, it did exclude. But it doesn't say that there, but...
Right, it should be IDN GTLDs. So it's looking at new GTLD registrations, the total population. And then of those, if you take the IDN, the set that's IDN, that's the chart on the right. So that should be more specific. Thanks.
Well, Wilkinson, I recall that the preparatory group did actually TLD data to be included, and thought we agreed that it would be. But from a statistical point of view, it would be quite simple stuff between now and the next edition to update those charts and to include the IDN.
Christopher, that's correct. There was a lot of interest, obviously, in CCCLD data as part of looking at the overall landscape. I'll tell you that it's more challenging to get CCTLD registration data than it is to get what we get from registry reports. So that's something that can continue. Did you have a question, Jonathan?
Yeah, just a quick question, and it could be that it's just too early in the morning for me, but the two slides you showed before were the number of GTLDs before and after and the number of registry operators before and after, and I'm confused at how the number of registry operators could have been bigger than the number of GTLDs, because I would think it would be less, because some of them have more than one, right? Verisign's.net and .com.
Can you go back a couple slides?
So maybe I'm just not understanding what you're showing, but see, legacy registry operators is 20, but if you go back a slide, the legacy GTLDs is 16, and that seems illogical to me.
Okay, yeah, I'm missing something. Yeah, you're right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, we'll take a note of that. Thank you. Any other questions on this section?
Sorry. So also in that same data set, Jordan Buchanan with Google, in that same data set of registry operators, especially looking at new ones, you guys doesn't look like you're making any attempt to distinguish entities where there's common ownership. So like donuts is being counted as one per TLD as opposed to, because they have a lot of subsidiaries. They are being tracked separately. Okay. That data is just not in this presentation. Okay, great.
Any other questions on these metrics? No. We can go to the next section. Greg?
Thank you, Karen. Karen said earlier, my name is Greg Rayford. I'm with Analysis Group. Next slide, and next slide, please. This work is joint with Catherine Tucker, who's an economist and professor at MIT Sloan School of Management. She wishes she could be here, but she's teaching a lot these days. We were retained by ICANN to assess and understand the competitive effects associated with the new GTLD program, with an eye towards both kind of the past, the current, and the future, with much more of an eye, as Margie indicated earlier, to looking towards the future, because the new GTLD program is still relatively young. And also, I think, as Margie mentioned, this report is really designed to establish a baseline for comparison from approximately a year from now, where we can see how, hopefully, how competition has changed as a result of the rollout of the program. So next slide, please. So in thinking about competition, at least in the report, we've primarily focused on competition among registrars and registries on two primary factors. So both prices, and we'll see some data on that, but also on non-price factors. And these are kind of squishy, but you could think about things that allow registrars or registries to try and differentiate themselves from other registrars or registries. So product differentiation, add-on products that are offered when you go to register your website, things of that nature. So to that end, we sent requests to both registries and registrars for a sample of new GTLDs. It was for 109 new GTLDs and then 14 legacy TLDs. The new GTLDs in particular were designed, or the sample was designed to sample from those that had been kind of historically popular, but also more recently popular. When I say popular, I say just number of registrations or mean number of registrations. And I'll just note, and we'll see this in a little bit, that we were careful to make sure that at least some of the new GTLDs that we were selecting represented each of ICANN's five regions, and also that some of them included or IDN in the string itself. So we sent these data requests, and unfortunately, we didn't quite have the responses that we had hoped for. So registries were quite responsive. We received a fair amount of wholesale data from the registry operators. Registrars, unfortunately, didn't provide much in the way of information. So we ended up going to the actual websites of the registrars and collected publicly available information from them on both the prices for a one-year registration, but also for any add-on offerings as well while we were there. Next slide, please. I think before we start diving into some of the initial baseline results, it's important to understand some of the study limitations. So, you know, I had mentioned that we had kind of had high hopes for some of the data we might get. And in particular, one of the things we wanted were really detailed transaction level data to answer questions such as, do consumers view a given legacy TLD as a substitute for a new GTLD, or do you see substitution across new GTLDs for consumers? So for this, we really would have liked to receive transaction-level data. We didn't. We're still kind of holding out hopes, but we'll see if that comes in. And then I think there's kind of historical reasons and also current reasons why you might expect, or there's some limitations that we can't really address in the study. So for example, legacy TLDs are subject to price caps. There's different costs in terms of getting into the market. So those types of factors might play into interpreting some of the results that you see today, but also that you'll see a year from now. Next slide, please. So before we dive into kind of a summary of the results, I just want to give you a little bit of a sense for the data that we ended up using in our study. So if you look at that top row way up there, you'll see that I didn't lie to you when I told you that we collected data, or were hoping to collect data, for 14 legacy TLDs and 109 new GTLDs. And then we collected a variety of information. So you can see that there's information on sunrise prices, wholesale prices, where when I say wholesale, it's we're thinking about the price that registries charge to the registrar, retail prices, where that's the prices, at least as we've kind of termed them, that the registrar is charging to the ultimate consumer, and then finally registration volume data, which we obtained from monthly transaction reports. And if you look at, there's kind of in each of those panels, there's a percentage that shows up in kind of the second row. And what that kind of gives you a sense for is, kind of, for example, for sunrise prices, you'll note that we obtained data for five legacy TLDs, but it encompasses only a really, really small percentage. In fact, it rounds to zero here of total registrations. But then when you look at wholesale prices, for example, you can see we have much better coverage in terms of our sample. So next slide, please. And then just to give you a little bit of sense for some of the geographical breakdowns, so this looks at the location of the registry, and you'll note that we certainly have more registries in Asia, Europe, and North America, although we do have a couple in Latin America and in Africa. Next slide, please. So just to give you a kind of a summary of the results, and if you were at the panel on Monday, you've already seen this, but so we'll go through it for those of you that weren't able to attend. So we first find that registration shares across both registries and registrars are more dispersed for new GTLDs as compared to legacy TLDs, and we'll see a table that kind of gets at this in a little bit. We see that new GTLD wholesale prices are on average higher than those for legacy TLDs, but kind of, you know, in thinking about that result, you want to think about this idea of the price caps that exist. We also see that new GTLDs have a little bit more price dispersion as opposed to legacy TLDs, and we'll see some examples of this. And then finally, when you think about add-on products and their price relative to the price of registering a domain name, the add-on prices are typically a fair amount higher than what you would have to pay if you registered the domain name itself. And there's a little caveat here. I think we've kind of addressed this to some extent, but it's important to note that the results we're seeing and we'll talk about today aren't you can't look at them and say, oh, you know, there's high levels of competition or there's low levels of competition. There's other explanations, and kind of this last sentence on the slide provides some, which is, you know, to the extent that a given or a set of GTLDs are really able to differentiate themselves from others, they may be able to, for example, charge higher prices than they would otherwise be able to charge. So next slide, please. So unfortunately, this table is a little small and hard to read, so I apologize for that. But this goes to the first kind of result that I mentioned, which is registration shares across registries. And so if you look at that middle column, you'll see the share of legacy TLD registrations for a set of registries. And VeriSign is up right at the top, which probably won't surprise too many people. And if you go all the way down in the... And so there's kind of a set of the top registries in this table. And if you go all the way down to the last row, you'll see all others. It's 0.2%. So most of the registrations are accounted for by a relatively small percent of registries. If you then go to the last column, here we're looking at the share of new GTLD registrations, and you see it begin to kind of disperse a little bit more. And you'll also note that the all others column at the bottom has really jumped up, suggesting there's kind of more of a right tail in the distribution of registration shares. So it seems like there's a little bit less or a little bit more dispersion. Next slide, please. So this is a slide for registrars. So we've changed now. And once again, the story's pretty similar. So GoDaddy has a pretty significant share of the legacy registrations, but once you move to the GTLD registrations, their share drops down and you see others beginning to kind of come in. And once again, the all others row at the very bottom in the second column moves from 28% to 46%. Once again, suggesting there's a little bit more of a right tail there. So next slide, please. So now moving to some of the price data that we were able to collect. So this chart plots legacy TLD wholesale prices over time. I'll just note that we excluded .travel because its wholesale price was quite high. I think it was $80 if I remember correctly. And so I think there's a couple things to note here, or maybe two. The first is that you see slight price increases over time, although nothing significant. The other is that if you notice the y-axis, so kind of from the prices at the end of the period range from about $6 to maybe $8.50. So there's not a lot of dispersion amongst wholesale prices for the registries. So next slide, please. And this is kind of a continuation of that point. So there are two side-by-side plots here. The first looks at wholesale prices, that's the left one. And then the second one looks at retail prices, so registrar prices, that's the second one. And just to orient you, the yellow bars are basically new GTLDs, the legacy TLDs are represented by the blue bars. And it's just to get a sense for where prices are kind of where the mass of prices is located. And what you can see is that for legacy TLDs, kind of ignoring one outlier, which is .travel. In general, the prices are pretty concentrated or not dispersed. Yeah.
So when you're doing wholesale prices, are you? I understand you excluded the Sunrise, but did you also exclude launch programs, either early access programs or others, where as you're launching, the price is obviously, even wholesale, is a lot higher than the steady state general availability. Yeah.
So I believe we did, but I would have to check for sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
On that point, Christopher Wilkinson, I'm also conscious of a few registries in effect charging zero for pre-selected registrars, and I wondered if that you've been able to extract that syndrome from the data. Naturally, these zero charges relate to relationships or cross ownership.
So my understanding is that we have, but once again, I would just need to double check. But I'm pretty sure that we did. And I'll just note, as a kind of coming from an economist background, we're quite accustomed to questions during our talks, so feel free to just keep peppering me with questions while I'm talking. I feel kind of weird talking and not getting lots of questions. Next slide, please. And then finally, I had mentioned this kind of the concept that when you look at add-on prices, add-on prices kind of compared to what the cost of registering a domain name is are relatively high relative to the price of the domain name. And so this just gives you a little bit of a sense for some of the data that we collected with respect to add-on prices from registrars. Once again, these were only publicly available from the registrar's website. And there's a fair amount of distribution, even within, I think, relatively narrowly defined categories, in part just because of the offerings that that registrars provide are quite diverse. And next slide, please. So just in terms of next steps, so we've published the baseline report. It's available on ICANN's website, as Margie mentioned earlier. In terms of going forward, what we're going to do, and we'll probably be seeing many of you less than a year from now, is we'll be updating the report, we'll be collecting additional data, we'll be sending additional requests out to registries and registrars. We'll continue to hope and pray that the registrars decide to provide transaction-level data, or if we can get any from secondary market facilitators as well. And I think that's it. So if there are any other questions. Yeah.
Well, phase two, I think one thing that's really important is renewal rates. Mm-hmm. I think that's key because, you know, the total number of registrations, as Mr. Wilkinson has said, you know, there were some registries that gave away large quantities of registrations for free, and to see what happens upon renewal, and not only what happens upon renewal in terms of number of registrations, but what those registries have to do upon renewal to entice renewal rates. So did those that offered free registrations also offer free renewals, or did they go to their steady state price, or did they discount in order to get additional renewals in?
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's something that's definitely on our mind, and we'll be collecting data on that.
Thanks, Jonathan Zook, for the record. What's interesting watching this presentation, and thank you for it, is that we begin to ask ourselves what the questions we're going to ask of the data, sort of, and what impact things had. And one of the things that struck me was your geographic distribution, for example, and that was a forced distribution on your part, a sampling distribution. It didn't reflect any natural distribution of registrants or anything like that, right? So it's a question of trying to get a couple from Africa and where else? Another place there was a couple from?
Latin America,
as opposed to that being reflective of anything, right? That was just your choice to do that.
Yeah, so it's actually, you're pretty close, I think. So it's a little, the only tweak I would add is, so when we kind of developing the sample is we really base the sample on both historical registrations of GTLDs and kind of more recent registrations. And then once we had done that, we then kind of went back and said, okay, well, do we have all of ICANN's regions covered? And if so, check. And so it actually turned out that by the sampling procedure that was based off of registrations only, we ended up with that distribution of GTLDs across region, or the registries across regions, if that makes sense.
So you didn't have to shove a couple in there at the end.
It
fell out naturally. And that distribution may change over the course of the year,
it might. Right?
And so what implications would that have on for the deltas that we'd be trying to look at?
I mean, that's a good question. And I think one of the things that, and we'll have to give some thought to that, you know, one of the things that we'll definitely be doing in the kind of the follow-up phase two report is adding additional new GTLDs to try and reflect what's current, what happens between now and then. But to the extent that we want to make sure that we're kind of oversampling or getting a different distribution from different regions, and something we should consider.
Greg, can we go back to that slide with the geographic regions? I don't know what slide that is. My question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it, is that just of the registries that were in your sample, or was that of all registries at the time? And I think.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You're right.
Difference.
You're right. Yeah. So I was completely and totally wrong.
Sorry, but yeah, because I.
Yeah, because that's all.
We did build. I mean, the sample did include an analysis that you wanted to make sure there were regions covered, all regions covered. But for this particular slide, we wanted to make sure we looked at all, not just the ones that were in the sample.
Yeah, that's right.
All is what you're saying.
And this is where all registries are currently located.
Doesn't add up to enough, though. I mean, I'm...
Yeah, we'll have to... Apparently, any table that involves actually tabulating registries is having a hard time today. Yeah, so we'll go back and check.
No. Karen is.
But I think it... But one thing I was going to add is I think it would be helpful to actually just within our sample to show the geographical breakdown of the registries.
Unless that's unique registries, because that was the second. There's the family of registries. So Donuts in Essentown is one North American.
Yeah, that's a good, that's certainly a good explanation.
And on the competition level, that's definitely a factor on choice. I think we're also interested in how things like the Joint Applicant Support Program worked in encouraging registries to pop up in other places. And so those raw numbers will be useful as well. And so that, again, it comes down to kind of the question we'll be asking of the data. It's almost like we need to make a fake version of it a year out and then see if we can ask the right questions. But that'll just take more thought.
First of all, you need to look at the effect of cross-ownership and vertical integration and on this, because I rather assume that GoDaddy has a portfolio, and one of their strategies would certainly be to make sure that the members of their portfolio were not competing with each other. And here, I'm surprised that 65 for Europe, and I would assume, unless you correct me, that that includes a significant portfolio in Gibraltar, by and large, are certainly not European companies. They're tax haven operations. And I think that in terms of the geographical distribution, you need to be a little bit more subtle as to where you think these registries are coming.
And I guess, as you're saying, kind of taking into account either this horizontal or, I think in this case, this horizontal integration.
In some cases.
Yeah.
I think these are the ICANN regions as opposed to any kind of taxation, right? Because I don't think they're accounting for, let's say, Uniregistry in the Cayman Islands. I think it's just literally the ICANN regions as opposed to any kind of taxation structure.
Thank you. Yeah, so
that's interesting, because assignments that happen too. So an application may have started in Europe, but then now has been assigned to North America. So you have the geographic distribution as settles.
Of location and ownership reference.
Thank you. So we typically use the ICANN regions for most of the statistical things that we do. But I take the point that we can add some of the underlying data that will help in that. Are there any other questions on the economic study before we move on?
So I have two questions about. One's about price data and one's about substitutes. Mm-hmm. So on the price data, I think you mentioned in the public session, maybe not here, that one of the effects that we're probably seeing is the effect of price caps on legacy TLDs, which aren't present in the new ones. One thing that might be interesting to look at in order to try to normalize for some of that effect, at least, would be if we could compare similar strings registered across the legacy versus new gTLDs to see. For example, there's premium prices set in the new gTLDs. And in particular, I think what we're seeing, like if you were to go out and try to buy, let's say, shoes.com, that that would be already registered. You might have to buy it on the aftermarket. The wholesale price isn't actually very relevant from a registrant perspective point. Versus if you want to get, like, I don't know, shoes.store or something, I don't delegated, so you can't do that. But that might be a lot cheaper, actually, from a registrant perspire that domain today. And so being able to look at some specific strings and look at availability across different TLDs and what they're in the aftermarket or the primary market might be interesting to understand range of consumer options actually looks like.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And it's why we've really been pushing to get some of that either secondary market data or kind of the transaction level data from registrars.
And the other question on other types of substitutes is, is there any attempt to look at other types of identifiers and how domain names might, now people are using apps or, maybe people have Twitter identifiers or Facebook accounts or something like that. And those identifiers, are these other types of things meaningful substitutes for the way people are using domain names? That gets much harder. It's probably more of a qualitative study initially, but then maybe once you do some qualitative look, you could then quantitative analysis that you could do to back that.
No, that's a really good suggestion. Thanks.
I'd just like to support the first part of that comment, because a great many of the new TLDs, although they appear at first sight to be generic, they are designed to create a identifiable, if not an exclusive, market, which is not competing with anything else. So, I mean, take the extreme case, take the ones that are, I suppose, candidates for PIC, so commitments. I would exclude those from the list. Dot bank is dot bank. It's going to be competing with dot shoes or dot something else.
No, I think your point's well taken. And one of the things that we didn't include in the presentation, but we do in the report, is we do, and something that we'll be looking at, especially in the kind of the subsequent report, is we group sets of GTLDs into sets that we think in which there might be some level of competition, and we'll be tracking them over time to see both what happens in terms of the registration shares, but also in terms of their pricing.
Okay. Sam Lanfranco, for the record, this is an economist asking an economist a question. All the complications around price and quantity here for a very, very heterogeneous product are extremely important for the industry. Is there any evidence in here that would be relevant for anti-competitive behavior in terms of public policy? Are there any kind of risk areas that flagged?
So we haven't identified any yet. I think we were really taking the approach was to establish a baseline in this case, and then to, I think, address or at least think certainly think about some of the question or what you're mentioning right now with respect to anti-competitive behavior and how it might be identified or noted.
Yes, I've already commented on that in relation to the preparation for the study, so I won't bore you with it now. May I just draw your attention to a more political procedural aspect of this study? I've been in different meetings during the week, and at one extreme, there are a group of people who responsibly see no new GTLD program at all until the full consequences of this analysis and the conclusions are drawn. And there is another group, which was vocal in the board meeting with the GRAS, who say that they want to have a new GTLD program as soon as possible, and have no interest whatsoever in studies that might delay the process. So I just draw your attention to the fact that the eyes of all wait upon you, Lord, and don't waste time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Just on that note, I think that's the two extremes. I think most people would probably be somewhere in the middle. You're always going to have the extremes. I think there's yet others that are calling for certain a limited round that wouldn't necessarily depend on the study. So there are some that argue, for example, that brands, that there should be brand TLDs that could come out, and it doesn't really matter how the study comes out because they don't view themselves as competing in the TLD market. So there's lots of different dynamics at play.
First round, whatever those dynamics were, broadly ignored, and the program was completely open to all comers. And
So thanks for the discussion. Let's move on to Dave. Oh, sorry, I didn't realize there was another question. Christina.
Is this working? Oh, there we go. It's a question from Edmund. He just wanted confirmation on this slide whether the legacy TLDs include CCs or not.
They do not include TLDs.
Okay.
We were not able to obtain pricing data from them.
Thank you.
We'll move now to the Global Registrant Survey. Dave?
Thanks, everyone. As with Greg, I'm happy to field questions as we go along, and thankfully I tabulate any registries for this. So background, this is looking a little different. So this was part of a community-driven, I'll read what's up here. To assess the goal here was to assess the current TLD landscape as well as to measure factors such as awareness, experience, choice, and trust with new GTLDs and domain name system in general. And so we did two groups seemed to be missing there, but one of them was consumers and end users, and the other one was registrants. The consumer survey was presented earlier this year. This is the registrant component. The content of the surveys is very similar, and in fact, the results have a lot of similarity between them. So if you're familiar with the earlier consumer survey, you'll see a lot of similarity here. We can go on to the next slide. It is missing all the content. So I'll just speak. Okay, I'll just speak off of my version here then. So who was in the study? They had to be 18 years of age or older. They had to have registered a domain name previously, and they had to have been the primary decision maker for that domain name. We conducted a total of 3,357 interviews across 24 countries and in 17 different languages. Those are all spelled out on the actual slide. As we go through the report today, you might be able to see little red or green dots that signify the significance. Those are computed against the global average. So if it's green, it's significantly higher. Red, it's significantly lower. And I'll hold here for a minute just to see if we get the display working. It's shifting the location on the slide. For anyone who's listening, we're having trouble with the display here in the room, and we're just trying to get it resolved.
So how was most of the data collected? Was it phone interviews or
online survey, web survey? A sample source came partly from ICANN-provided sample and partly from Nielsen maintains a large database of global internet users, and so part of it was fielded through the Nielsen database. So we had two sample sources. They were on the registrant sample. They were invited to join via email, and there's a similar process for the Nielsen sample. There are people who've on the Nielsen side have opted in previously. Well, that one looks pretty good.
No, the first few are only have that problem. If you get into the if you keep going, they'll get better.
Yeah. So that's all the background. We can go into the results. Blind. All right, so we'll start off talking about awareness of the new GTLDs. There's probably 3 points to make, or maybe four. One, we didn't obviously couldn't test awareness of every new GTLD, so a subset was chosen, and that was consistently presented to respondents. You see those results in the bubbles on the right-hand side. 65% of the sample was aware of at least one of the GTLDs in the set. The largest was for email, and the second largest was for link. Then we saw club, guru, and photography in that order. XYZ and Realtor were the least well recognized. So another one of the things to note here is that consistently in the consumer data and in this data, we tend to see that extensions that seem interpretable or seem familiar get higher results. And that perceived familiarity is something that we'll want to obviously look at. This forms a baseline. We'll be wanting to look at the momentum in those. And it's, we also think it's one of the advantages, potential advantages of the new TLDs. Second thing is you'll see as a question was asked in the general session that awareness levels in general terms are higher in Asia and in South America than they are in North America, Europe, or Africa. That was particularly true in Asia for the top three there and also South America for Link. But in general, when you look at that top number, overall awareness was higher in those geographic areas. I think the point is here, this forms a baseline. This is where people say they have awareness now. What we'll really be looking forward to is seeing the momentum in that as we go to the next wave. The next slide shows average awareness and visitation, which is interesting to look at. So on the left-hand side, we have the legacy GTLDs, and you can see the top three, .com, .net, and .org, had an average awareness level of 81%. That drops down to the group contains Mobi, Pro, Tel, Asia, and Co-op. That drops down to 19% average awareness. And then the geographically targeted TLDs, the awareness within their regions jumps way back up. So those have relatively high awareness within their regions. I'm going to skip the visitation. We'll talk about that in a second. The new GTLDs, both the generic and the geographically targeted extensions, have lower average awareness. As we go forward, we'll consider how interested we actually are in average awareness, because many of the new GLTs may be much
are inherently more affinity sort of oriented, and getting to the level of, you know, a very high level of average awareness may not be something that we'll really expect to see. So it's this data on the next slide that shows the sort of combined awareness, if I'm aware of anyone, any of them. So overall, the sample, 99% were aware of at least one of the GTLDs that we tested. I don't know who the other 1% was, but probably just measurement error. The highgroup.com.net.org, 94% said they were aware of at least one of those. And then you see how that drops down and then pops up again for the geographically targeted TLDs. For the new GTLDs, that combined awareness is 65%, which mostly comes from the reference set of generic extensions, email, photography, link, guru, realtor, club, and XYZ. The geographically targeted, which were a few IDN and also things like .Berlin, .London, those have lower overall awareness. And again, it's because they have, one, I think that's earlier for them and that they have relevance within their local area, but not more broadly. Yeah.
What's a geographically targeted legacy GTLD?
Well, it's the specific ones aren't listed here, but I think it would be something like .UK.
Those are CCTLDs. That's okay, but it's not.
Yeah, that's what CCTLDs were. What our geographically targeted were, weren't they? You're not on yet. Oh, here.
So I think it depends which data set this is meant to reflect, because we did have in the survey show some CCTLDs, and I think we also in the case of regions showed some relevant IDNs in the new GTLD sample, and so I think we're trying to find a term that would combine both of those types of TLDs that wasn't really long. So I think that's what we meant, but I think it's not clear from the headings on the slide which group we're reporting in those percentages. So
in relation to the awareness that we did ask to include the comparison with the local CCTLD, which in many countries are most aware legacy.
And I can easily pull that. It's not on my notes on this slide. I can easily pull that up and answer it. It'll just take me a few minutes to open a file, which I can do at the end.
And this is registrants, right?
Correct.
So these are all people who have, in fact, registered a name.
Self-reported.
And was one of the questions which, like, domain they registered in? No?
No, I don't believe we have that information, no.
We asked if they had multiple registrations, but I can't remember specifically if we asked. Karen, do you remember? Did we ask that?
I thought we had, but I'm not positive.
I can open up the full report and look at it in just a moment. Okay, next slide is the comparison of the awareness of the new GTLDs between the consumer and the registrant samples. And you can see that combined awareness is about 20 points higher for the registrants than the consumers. And as you go down each of the individual extensions that was included in the reference set, you can see it's consistently higher across the board. So this group, in general, as you look at the characteristics of this sample, they're a bit more informed about the processes, a bit more savvy in general terms, if you will, higher awareness levels. Next slide. Just a quick point to make. We had the same finding from the consumer survey that visitation rates tend to follow very closely. If I'm aware of a GTLD, I tend to have the intent or have visited it, so visitation follows closely on the heels of awareness, and what that reflects in part is there's a dynamic of why people, they're looking for something, which is how they become aware of a domain, so it's obvious that most of them are going to have learned of that in that process, and so have an intent to go there for some reason. Next slide. So 3 points here, we start to get into trust. So out of awareness and visitation and into trust levels, the level of perceived familiarity tends to correlate strongly with the level of trust. The more I feel familiar or feel that I'm aware of an GTLD, the more I'm likely to trust it. And we looked at some other issues in terms of trust. One was there's this dynamic that we saw in both studies that there's a general aversion to extensive restrictions on purchase of GTLDs or domains, but there's an acceptance that if I know that there are some purchase restrictions for that, I tend to have a little more confidence or trust in that. So we might say that the general takeaway is that they want a light hand, but they still recognize there's value in those restrictions. The other interesting thing is that, as I said, this is a somewhat more sophisticated group than the general online consumer group, but they are actually more likely to say they have modified their online behaviors because of concerns about bad behavior. So they're more likely to have say that they have individually modified their online behavior in order to avoid problems. Trust levels down below in the bars, you can see for the legacies, fairly high trust levels in general, lower for the new GTLDs, but that's not surprising since they are newer to the market, less familiar, less well-known. The next slide. So we also looked at trust in the domain name industry, and what we find is that while the registrants are even more likely to say they've come across some form of bad behavior out there, their overall perceptions are similar to the consumers. They actually tend to, even though they've had more exposure to the bad behavior, they have less fear about it. And so that, again, we think knowledge lessens fear, and that's what we're seeing here. That fear, however, is still widespread and fairly strong. And they're not necessarily sure, they're not really any better at knowing what's going to help protect them or what steps they should take if they do observe bad behavior than the consumers were. So there's still an education option there for what to do. We didn't find really any strong correlation between awareness of abuse or experience of abuse with their trust in the domain name industry. Whether I've seen those behaviors or not, I still have the same general level of trust in the industry as a whole. And actually, if I fear the abuse, I'm actually more likely to trust the industry. We're not quite sure why that is, other than just a general reflection of that you're out there and being an eye on things, I suppose. The trustworthiness between consumers and registrants on the next slide, pretty similar, a little bit higher. Trust level for some of the less well-recognized new extensions among the registrants, but overall fairly close. And on the next slide, this is what they so we did ask this. Sorry, gosh. It's early in my time. It's what GLT, what TLDs they had registered, .com, the largest, net and org following InfoBiz, and then these are the legacies, which ones there had been registered. Again, you see a stronger prevalence of .com and .net in North America. Those are relatively lower in other parts, particularly in Europe. Next slide, we asked them what factors drove their decision about what GTLD to purchase. The perception that it was well known is the dominant factor, followed by price. And then secondary lower level concerns, everything else that I wanted was already registered, so it's what was left to me, that sort of thing. And that it's new, that it's different, relatively small influence. However, we did see that pop up in Asia, kind of a general sense that newness was an advantage. Next slide. This looks at the term I've been using is bad behavior. This looks at the bad behaviors that we had them report about, and then specifically what they did to try and counteract these bad behaviors. And you can see in both categories, registrants and consumers, for all of these, the number one action is to purchase antivirus software, whether or not that's actually going to help them against some of these things. Then the second is that they changed their internet habits. That's particularly strong for things like phishing and stolen credentials. The pink boxes, which aren't showing up there, sorry. So the registrants are a little bit less likely to have said that their answer was they purchased antivirus software for phishing and cyber squatting. So that makes sense, but it's not a big difference. They're more likely to have said that they changed their internet habits, purchased an identity protection plan, or stopped making online purchases altogether. A relatively small number of people gave that response, but it is higher among the registrants than among the consumers. So I apologize for the display problems, but that's the end of the – there's much more data in the report, and open up the full report and provide the answers of which CCTLDs, legacy, what was in that group. Any other questions?
Thank you, Dave. So we're actually at the end of our time, but I'll leave a couple moments open in case there are any questions, and then we'll be around afterwards as well.
Thanks. Quick question. A lot of reason we asked for this survey was around this issue of trust, and one hypothesis is that TLDs with some kind of a public interest commitment, like .bank or some of the pharmacies, et cetera, might help to people make people feel more trusting of the DNS generally. And so I'm curious, because it feels like where that would show up is in your trustworthiness of the gTLDs, and if it's not part of your sample, that could be a problem. And the other is the modification of behavior, like I only bank with somebody that has a .bank or something like that. And so, I mean, I know that the review team will be interested in whether or not PICs had an impact on trust in the DNS.
Yeah, I think that's likely a line of questioning to look at incorporating into the next wave once the new gTLDs are more established and we see more adoption of that. Those dynamics that would be good to explore.
There's another question from the chat pod. I think wait for Karen. It's from Patrick Miles. Does ICANN have any way to get data on gTLD registrant location breakdown by country? Is this or would it ever be a public data resource?
Thank you. That's actually one of the metrics that was that Brian discussed earlier in the presentation. It's not one of the ones that we talked about here, but that was actually one of the ones that was recommended. I think it was looking at the new gTLD registrant population geographically. And so we are looking at some data sources to try to obtain that, which would be on that page that's listed in the slides.
Edmund Chung here. So I have two questions actually on the trust part. First one is the first slide that you had, is it trust for the registry or trust for registrations within the TLD? That seems to me a very big difference there. And then should I ask the second question also is interesting. You kind of mentioned in passing that even though they met issues, their trust for the industry actually is related, inversely related. I think that is a very important point, in fact, and shouldn't be mentioned in passing. It means that, it means exactly what it may mean, what exactly you speculated on, is that they thought, there were problems in the issues. They had an experience, and they saw, how well it was handled by the people in the industry. So just those points.
So to the first one, we asked both. We asked them what their level of trust was, and we also, there's a lot of data that's not shown today. We also asked them sort of a variety of factors that influence their trust level in individual domains. Then we also asked about their trust level in the domain name industry in general relative to other parts of the technology sector. And to that piece, you do as well or better than any other part of that sector. So that's the good, you know, online marketers are in there, those sorts of things. The general thing that we also didn't show is that when they think about the bad behavior, they don't think that it's really the domain name industries or ICANN's role to police that. They tend to say that that's the job of consumer protection agencies or law enforcement agencies. So it's almost like they don't really associate that as your job or, you know, the industry's job to police. So it's really an independent thing. So I think that bit about those that have been exposed or those who have fear are more trusting. I think we see that there's a pattern that they've taken steps and they're just more confident in how to navigate.
Question about the visitation data. Sorry, once again, Jordan Buchanan with Google. The visitation data, is there any plan to supplement the self-reported visitation data with like instrumented user behavior data?
Yeah, at this point in time, that hasn't been discussed. And for the second wave of this survey, it would be to look at changes in the self-reported behavior. But certainly, an instrumented version will generally provide you with a little more accurate one's recall and best memory versus actual behavior. And those are never the exact same thing.
Yeah. Well, again, I join Jonathan in. And thanks. And base of the work, it's difficult. It's complex. I'm sure I'll have some more questions when I've reread your slides, which are very legible here, and reread the whole report. As to the last question, I think there's some of us in the room who don't think our data about which websites we visit should be available.
Well, yeah, that's beyond my remit here. But just quickly, examples of the geographically targeted domain names, they were basically the country specific, .mx for Mexico, .ca for Canada. So, and they, we looked at within each of the countries, you know, whether or not they were aware of those. When you narrow that down towards the area of relevance, both the trust levels and the awareness levels are way up the legacy ones, not yet for the new ones.
First a comment. I think it's very important that we label exactly. Because we spend a lot of time about knowing if it's GTLDs, it's CCTLD, it's all TLDs, the legacy TLD. You may explain why you have just 16. They are 21 or 22, and want to have the reality of the world that. Gov and .mil are GTLDs. We can say what we want, but they are GTLDs. And we can say they would exclude them from the study for XY reason, but clearly says. And my second point is that do we have any intention to public all those data in open data?
The full report is already made public in open data. Do you mean you want access to the actual data files so that you could run your raw data? Okay.
So the data tables are actually published online along with the report on our website. It's, 500 pages or something of data tables, all the answers.
It's not machine-readable.
I think they're asking for something like a CSV file or an SPSS file or something like that.
Yeah, we could look at that. We're working on that. Any other questions? All right. Well, we appreciate you bearing with us with the slide difficulties. We'll go back to the one that's posted and clean it up so that it's more readable and useful. But really appreciate everybody's comments and attendance and discussion at this session. And we'll be around for any other questions. Thank you.